Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby Podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
As far as I can see, I always want to get in the Irish team. And that should be every young player's dream and ambition in this country. And if you're playing in a place where you're not going to get the opportunities in the big games, that they're the ones that get you picked. They are the ones, the Champions Cup games are the ones that get you picked. You need to be playing in a team and starting in a team for those games. It's as simple as that if you want to play in the Irish team.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by cardiologist Dr. Paddy Barrett, chatting all things cardiovascular disease.
The way I look at this is that the two statistics that everyone should really be aware of is cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death globally and in most developed nations, but it's also the most preventable. 90% of it can be prevented at an early stage if you just follow the right steps and formula. So I look at it as a scary opportunity.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Championship starts in 2 weeks' time, but look, we're in the month of April now. I'd say you could nearly hand Limerick the Lee McCarthy Cup now, right now, if you wanted to.
Joe Biden will be getting a phone call now to sort out a few visas to see if his Irish credentials as strong as he's making out. So we'll see you over the next week.
Hello and welcome to the Throw-In with me, Michael Verney. And this week I'm joined by Donica Boyle, Dick Clarkin and John Milan to look back on the start of the Football Championship and the conclusion of the Hurling League. We'll talk about Limerick's dominance later in the show, but first, let's start with the football. And Dick, what a difference a week makes for Mayo.
Yeah, well, a week's a long time in politics, a longer time in Connacht football. Yeah, listen, firstly, I'm not going to go down the line of dismissing it from Mayo's point of view just because it's provincial. I think there's, you know, we'll maybe talk about that in a minute. I'd say it, in terms of the game itself, it was what you want in any championship game. Full-blooded, passion, all the sort of controversy in terms of maybe refereeing decisions, performances. But to be fair to Roscommon, and I was critical of them here a few weeks back when I was less than impressed seeing them in the flesh in Clonus, they just rolled up their sleeves and done what had to be done to win a game. Like, it was horrible conditions. They just worked harder. And it's an old adage in football and in sport, the team that works harder generally gets the result when there's little else between them, and they did, and it was phenomenal. I didn't think they'd keep it up. I just thought Mayo's conditioning and maybe a wee bit more experience would finally find a way, but it didn't in that last sort of 10-15 minutes that Roscommon were able to sort of defend so resolutely and so disciplined. Was a huge testament to Davy Burke, Mark McHugh, and the whole team. And, you know, they're basically, I'd say, they're very like big grins on their faces, you know, after listening to everybody talk Mayo up and maybe dismiss Roscommon, and fair play to them, and it certainly proved me wrong.
Yeah, and as Dick said, it comes down to that little bit of experience. They've been round the block, this Roscommon team. They've won kind of titles. They've been up and down from Division 1 and Division 2. So it's hard earned, you know, that sort of calmness under that sort of pressure. And they've won big games before. We were talking about it, Dick said a few weeks ago, I've seen them, and I was pretty impressed with them. I see Davy Burke was saying after the game that they were sort of written off. I'm not sure, like, every GAA team in history seems to suffer from being written off at some stage or another. I'm not sure who ever thought that Roscommon were going to be a walkover for Mayo. He clearly wasn't reading his Irish Independent, because we had about 1,000 words during the week on how good they were defensively when he was talking about it. Actually, after the Donegal game, he mentioned, he went through the three goals they conceded in the league, and he basically put two of them down to preventable errors. And the one goal he says they were opened up for and properly taken apart for was David Clifford's one against Kerry. But, like, so he has that sound base and structure, which he always talks about. And then you can go from there, and they have proper footballers in the forwards, and they've a range of options as well. They've different types of players they can pick and choose depending on who they're playing. So, very good result for them. I agree with Dick too, like, that's, you know, everyone talking about before the game. Mayo have 6 weeks now to the All-Ireland series. That is not a bad thing for a team chasing All-Ireland, I don't think. I think that they'll go as third seeds. I think the third seeds play the first seed, so they'll be playing a provincial winner in the first game, I think. You know, 6 weeks to prepare for that. It's not a terrible position to be in for a team who want to win in All-Ireland.
It's not, but at a very simple level, Kevin McStay and Mayo, win yesterday's game, lose yesterday's game. Which do you pick? They pick winning that game every day, and every other team. So this business that we sort of reverse engineer the team's prospects just because they lost, and it's not a bad thing for Mayo. That was a bad thing for Mayo. There's a lot of players, and they'll get over it. As you said, they have time, and they'll come back, and obviously in 6 weeks' time, we'll talk about them again. But like a lot of players who are flying high are feeling a wee bit sheepish now. You know, the Aidan O'Shea's, the Ryan O'Donoghue's, the Tommy Conroy's. There were very, very few good Mayo performances yesterday. And that's never a good thing as a player to have. Like, they have to get back out. They have to get back on the saddle. Put it like this, those players get injured. If that's their season. That's what their season's remembered for. You're only as good as your last game. So they have to come back at it again. And until that happens, Roscommon are flying high. So whatever happens in 6 or 7 weeks' time will happen. But for the moment, you know, Mayo, you know, will be feeling a wee bit sore about themselves. And it'll be not just as joyous a dressing room as it has been for Kevin McStay. But in the broad scheme of things, you know, you learn from defeats sometimes. Now, at the same time, I was just doing the stats, only 6 counties, and it's not an insignificant number, have won the All-Ireland, having not won the provincials. So it does show that there is a trend in terms of form teams, ability to win clutch games, that they can go the whole way. Mayo lost a clutch game at home. They should have won. And whatever about anything else, that's a mark against them.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the other thing I would say is that I don't think Mayo looked like they were going at it hammer and tongs from the first round of the league. And I don't think you were ever going to be able to go from the last week of January to the last week of July playing the game they do that's so high energy and attritional and not miss a beat. So from that, again, just from that point of view, I think, yeah, it's not ideal. I agree with you, Dick, but you know, there's the way it is this year, and because it's so different, and it's the first time it's happened, I think there's a window now just to maybe even take the heat out of things a small bit, because you know,
yeah, I don't.
We get very carried away with Mayo sometimes, because they are such a good story. Like,
but the opposite argument applies then come the knockouts, because what is handed to them now is a more difficult group as a third seed, so they could be potentially pitted with say a Dublin and a Derry. And, you know, so they could do well to get in the top places. If they don't and they finish third in that group, they have an extra game. So they have harder games and possibly an extra. All these things add up. That's what I'm sort of saying. But all these things add up over the course of the year in terms of demand on a panel and all the rest. And they've just given themselves a harder route than they probably would have had otherwise. And that's, you know, marginal differences, but these things have a potential to accumulate over a season, you know?
They all, like, there will be one of those All-Ireland groups will be very interesting, because you'll have New York or Sligo.
That's right.
You'll have, say, someone from the Meath, awfully loud West Meath side, I think is still standing on that side in Leinster.
Yeah.
So, like, there's going to be a group that'll be, I think that at least one, what that on paper won't look particularly strong. So we're probably going off topic here a little bit, but
I know, but it's not done because everyone, like, even the Sunday game, like, I'll turn it on last night and it's the first thing they talk about, dismissing the competition. So if we're going to talk about that, well, then it has a relevance to the whole year. But as I say, it's not just as black and white in terms of dismissing the game, because there is an added context. But I think a lot of people only actually figuring out the new season and all the different permutations, and it's interesting to hear different conversations that people still don't understand. Even their house yesterday watching the game, they're like, so are Mayo in or what are they in? You know, and people are still figuring that out. So it is an interesting sort of side topic, you know.
No, I don't think anyone will fully understand it until it's happened, really. But it's funny because we'd all, you know, there's probably been several different epitaphs written for the provincial championships. And then all of a sudden we have 3 surprises, you'd have to say. And we'll go to the Bronx on Saturday night, Dick. What a scene, an amazing scene, really. A penalty win over Leitrim. Now, Leitrim left a bag of goal opportunities behind them. They probably should have been out of sight. But I think Shane Carty kicked the levelling point to force extra time off a left boot because his right quad was torn, apparently, midweek. He threw that one over Mikey Brosnan, who's born and raised in New York City, but of Kerry origin, kicks the winning penalty and the place erupts. Johnny Glynn, who's covered that much ground, he's actually physically not able to move off the sideline and run into the pitch. He's just hugging someone on the sideline. It was an unbelievably uplifting scene to kick off the first day of the championship.
Like, it is. I was over in New York about three or four years ago, and I went out to Gaelic Park to do a coaching session with the young Fela team. There's a guy, Paul Moore, locally here, was involved with them. And it ties into the bigger story, but there's an awful lot of homegrown players. Like the football scene over there isn't what it was in terms of, you know, very dependent on the Irish imports for the summer. There's a much more homegrown element now to the football scene over there. You can see it at underage, and that's coming through now in their senior team. And you can see that what that bringing to them, that sort of support, the local element and the talent. You know, they're not just dependent on a few guys flying in and commuting from all over the district. They're there, they're local, they're training, and you know, like all of us do, Mick, playing for the jersey, playing for the passion, not playing for the summer holiday or the few bob that they're getting while they're there. And it means a huge amount to them, and it's a great story, as I say, if nothing else between them. And we'll talk about Colm Collins and Clare at the minute. If nothing else, that's the retention of the provincials justified for another year, because that's what you want. Do you know what I mean? You can't replicate that in round robin league type structures that might seem on the face of it that they're a better format, and in some contexts they are, but you'll never replace that sort of knockout provincial parochial feel. And it was great to see. And Andy Moran will be sick. You can imagine him coming back on the plane, and you say he had big ambitions to try and bring Leitrim on, and that's a massive knockback for him, irrespective of whatever Tailteann Cup. That's not something you want on your report card, and he'd be very disappointed, because they had a lot of chances. They probably will regret that for a long time. It's not something you want to carry, the first team to lose a championship game in Gaelic Park. And fair play to New York, you know.
I think it was the 23rd attempt, Donegal. Yeah. I know you've been out there covering the Connacht Championship game for the Irish Independent before, but and I know you listed down through their squad and their team. Like, when you look at it, like Johnny Glynn, Shane Carty, Mark Ellis, the two boys from Tip, Bill Maher, Alan Campbell, Owen Cairn from Galway, and I'm sure you'll name out a few more. It's a fairly star-studded squad by all accounts.
Yeah, as you say, I was there 5 years ago when I backed the wrong horse. I managed to convince the office that, listen, this is, history is going to be made now. This is the time it's going to happen. And I was only out by about 5 years. So that game actually in 2018 went extra time. And it's funny, we were talking to Keith Byrne during the week there, and he talked about that 2018 game. And he was saying before that they trained on Astro, they trained on Astro, they trained on Astro to get used to the surface in Gaelic Park. And this time, obviously, they had 2 weeks between their last round of the disappointment of not getting promoted in the league, and then 2 weeks to prepare. So that was another factor, and it's probably fairly significant, I would say, that going from playing on grass pitches for 3 or 4 months to go down. But for New York to get over the no games thing, I think that's always the single biggest issue. Last year, they had Salt Hill knock the car out. This year, they didn't have anyone out. I think Dingle might be going out in a couple of weeks. But for them to overcome that, I think that's the single biggest thing. Like, loads of players, as you said, but dude, I did a piece with one of the selectors, Gareth Bailey. He won an All Ireland down in '94, and he was just saying, look, we on the days Leitrim were playing league football, they had in-house training matches, so they pulled together 40 fellas and made a game out of it. He says, like, it's, you try your best to replicate everything, but it's really, really, really hard. But a great story and sort of uplifting, and, you know, hard for Leitrim, but, you know, anything that happens for the first time in 23 attempts, I think it's worth cherishing. As Dick said, the provincial championships are under scrutiny now in terms of where they stand and in terms of teams' importance. But that there is an example of what they still hold and what they can still do for the game.
Yeah, and no, we don't like to condone these things, but there was plenty of old school, gamesmanship. I think every time York scored, there was a Limerick man putting his arse coming out the field. Like, they done what they had to do to win, and they wanted to win. It wasn't just an exhibition game, a one-off. They really went to win it, and they done what they had to do to get over the line. And, you know, whilst we don't want to condone it, but you could see that they were trying to get every wee gain, every wee bit to annoy the Leitrim players, and it worked in the end. Fine margins.
They did. They were running into Leitrim lads every chance they got. Right. But just think, any chance of that was always the softer side of the draw on Connacht, and somebody was going to get to a Connacht final. They play Sligo now, obviously on Irish soil. It's a completely different prospect, you'd imagine. I know they came back and played Offaly last year in the Tailteann Cup, but it's a completely different prospect than playing in their home surroundings. They're the ones that are travelling now. We don't know if they'll have everybody available to them with visas and different things like that. What chances of an upset in a Connacht semi-final?
Joe Biden will be getting a phone call now to sort out a few visas to see if his Irish credentials as strong as he's making out. So we'll see over the next while. Listen, are Sligo that far away from New York that that couldn't be an upset? Absolutely not. They're a Division 4 team. That's the level that Sligo are at, and that's what New York have just beaten in Leitrim. So, absolutely, the conditions now, the panel, yeah, we wait and see what New York team is able to come over. But listen, like London, what year was it? A decade ago, London found their way to a provincial final, and on their merits, absolutely don't rule that out. All I know is Sligo will be not really looking forward to this game because they're in a no-win situation, and that's not a nice place to be for any team. It's all advantage is New York. Great experience for them, and sure, you know, it'll be massive for all those players. And a lot of them are obviously coming back home. It's not, but a lot of the homegrown players, what an experience it'll be for them. And they'll prepare for it now, and they'll get a lot of goodwill. I'm sure they'll try and get over maybe early, try and get a few challenge games. When is it? Is it 2-3 weeks, that game?
Two weeks? Yeah.
Right, so it's tough now. They'll probably not get a whole pile. I'd say you'll probably find them looking to get home maybe next weekend to try and get something, maybe even just a good game and a grass pitch. As you say, so small things like that will be a big bear. They won't have that advantage. But listen, it's a great story, and you know, I'll not be putting any money on Sligo, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it looks like the way Shane Carty was talking last night, if the quad is torn, you'd wonder, was he available straight away? Yeah. You mentioned the visa issues could be something. And then travelling is obviously huge as well. Like I know last year, for example, they had to book, before the draw was made for the Tailteann Cup, they had booked their accommodation. And I was doing a piece with Johnny McGeaney, the manager, about it. So he had no idea where they were going to be playing, whether they were going to be like in the south of the country, north of the country. So he just put them in Newry because he knew someone in Newry and he stayed in the Canal Court. But he ended up, so what's Newry to Tullamore is what, two and a bit hours probably, is it?
Mm,
So that was just one of those logistical things they had to overcome. So they have to pull that trip together now very quickly. Now, maybe they had the bones of it in, but they have to pull that trip together very quickly, get it sorted, and they'll improve for the game. But I thought Sligo, actually, bar the first 20 minutes, thought Sligo quite good in the Division 4 final. And Niall Murphy's a hell of a footballer. He's a hell of a footballer as well, so he'd take some mind.
You mentioned Colin Collins and Clare. You know, they came from Division 4 to 3 to 2 and stayed in 2 for 6 years, and they went down this year. They should have beaten Dublin, probably should have beaten Kildare, and you're just thinking, oh, is the ball burst here a small bit? And then they produced, I know Brian Hurley was missing, who's obviously, you know, probably Cork's best player. It was a fantastic result for Clare yesterday, and the cornerback coming up and hand passing over the winner. But and they came from behind. They've been ahead in a lot of league games and lost the lead. They came from behind in this, and you could see it's probably the biggest win of his tenure, and probably the most important game of his tenure as well.
Whatever, but the win itself in terms of beating a scalp like Cork in it from a historical sense, that's massive for Clare football. But now look at how that turns Clare's season on its head. Like they were very disappointed to drop back down and potentially miss out on the new All-Ireland series and have to go into the Tailteann Cup. They have an opportunity now that either, just again, we're all double checking ourselves here that we're getting our predictions right in terms of the winners of Clare and Limerick now go into the All Ireland series. That's a semi final. And that's great to see. And like anyone that's out there dismissing the relevance and the structures, that's what I'm sure the people in Croke Park who devised this system are looking at that and says, there you go. That's the perfect example of how the provincials can still be a massive card for these counties, because now through the provincial structures, Colm Collins or Limerick are bringing their team to the All-Ireland Series through it. And that's great. And like that's a great carrot, because they deserve to get that opportunity, because it's hard to see how long that Clare team and Colm Collins could stick together to try and compete at that level. So it's great to see that they hopefully can get that opportunity. Because again, you know, after the league defeat, I'm sure they were disappointed and having lost the likes of Tubridy over the last few years. Big players that you fought, how are they going to replace that quality? And look at young Keelan Sexton, look at the few points he kicked yesterday, as good as you'll see in any county jersey. And, you know, good luck to them. And it's really great to see, again, Cork, like many times we say it over the last two decades, just constantly, you know, flatter to deceive, and any sign of progress that you think that they're making, they just sort of let you down. And you sort of, the GA needs a strong Cork team. It's good for Munster, it's good for the overall competition. They just cannot seem to put a panel and any sort of consistency together. So it'll be difficult for them to try and regroup and make any sort of fist of the year, because it wasn't particularly, I know they're missing Hurley, but they should have enough. They should have enough of a panel in depth to try and put up a better performance than that. But they didn't, and all credit to Clare.
The knock-on effects too are interesting. That was the other thing that came out of the game. So immediately, like, you know, that turns the screw on Meath now. So if Meath don't get to a Leinster final, Meath on the Tailteann Cup. So Meath are playing Offaly now in a couple of weeks' time. That's a massive game for them, you know, massive game. And by no means, I don't think there are too many Meath people who go into that with a huge degree of confidence as things stand. And then they have to take, whoever wins that would have to take out the winners of Louth and Westmeath. So Meath, from a result in Ennis, all of a sudden Meath are fighting for their lives in the first championship game. The safety net of their league standing, getting them into Sam Maguire, is gone now on the basis of that. And the other thing it does too is it turns the attention a little bit on Kildare, because Kildare are unlikely to get to a Leinster final because they're on the Dublin side of the draw. And if, say, Cavan were to take out Armagh, which is not beyond the realms of possibility by any stretch, and then go on a Windsor semi-final and get to an Ulster final, that could push Kildare out of the reckoning as well. So it's like, you know, all the domino things, the domino effect is happening. So there's a game in Ennis that has ramifications for Navan and Newbridge, which is one of the advertisements for this system.
It is, and it's very hard. You can't dismiss that. You know, like as you say, the Meath context now, that game is, it's just a massive, massive game. Like Colm O'Rourke has been trying to dampen expectations, and now there's a long term. He's not going to get away with that. They have to be beaten Offaly in that game. Like that is a full blooded championship game for Meath. Like every game now is like it's like a knockout, because for Meath to not make the All Ireland series, having been in a Division 2 team, that'll not be good for Meath football or Colm O'Rourke, no matter what he says about the long term.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think there'll be much argument. I don't think you can argue with this system. You get a couple of chances to guarantee, you get your 7 games in the league to prove your worth, and then you'll get a chance again in the championship to prove your worth. And Meath are not on the Dublin side of the draw, so if they don't get into the Sam Maguire series, then you'll end up where you belong, basically.
This is it. Yeah, 100%.
Awfully have the benefit of a game under their belts as well going into that Meath game. It wasn't pretty now exactly going up to Glennon Brothers Pierce Park to beat Longford. They finished 1-12 to 1-11, but they grounded out. That sets up a quarter final against Meath, as you said. And Dunnock, I know you were in Normora Park yesterday. Leash had a 2-17 to 2-13 win over Wexford, but football was not really top of everyone's agenda in Port Leash yesterday, by all accounts, with those tragic circumstances off the pitch.
Yeah, and something that didn't really come to light until after the game was quite eerie. I was kind of walking down the tunnel in Port Leash, and you both know it, like big long tunnel, the whole length of the stand and down to where the dressing rooms were, and there wasn't a sound, you know, and it was a little bit strange. And eventually we figured out that one of the members of the Leash panel had got some horrible news that a member of his family had passed away just hours before the game. So as I understood it, the squad had gathered and then that panel member was taken away and told the news. So that just emerged just after the game. So I think the Leash squad were only informed after the game as well. So very difficult. The game itself, and obviously thoughts with the family, of course. The game itself was, you know, someone made the point yesterday that the early rounds of Leinster are maybe some of the best or most entertaining football you'll see. Leash's desire to kick the ball was admirable. Then Wexford weren't far behind them either. Leash absolutely mad to kick the ball. Great to watch. Loads of turnovers, loads of mistakes, loads of stuff that you never, if all you do really is watch Division 1 games and Division 1 teams, stuff you never see. But it actually turned out to be a very sort of entertaining game. Leash were deserved winners. Couple of good inside forwards that made the difference. Evan O'Carroll's a good player, Mark Barry, but the desire to kick the ball was refreshing. And you know, it was another one of those things. Now this is we've been talking about some of the pros of the system. Here's one of the, well, you can argue whether it's a con or not, but the prize for the winners yesterday was Dublin in 2 weeks, and Wexford are going off. They have 5 weeks until the Tailteann Cup. Now I don't know if you can put your hand in your heart and say one is definitely better than the other. And it shouldn't be like that. I don't know what you think of that. I'm not sure if Leash are best served playing Dublin. I think it's in Port Leash. Or are they best served going hammer and tongs after the Tailteann Cup and getting those 5 weeks to prepare for it. Does that game serve Leash in 2 weeks' time?
Yeah, very similar situation with Tipperary beating Waterford. The prize in inverted commas is facing Kerry. Whereas the, you know, Waterford go off and prepare for the Tailteann Cup and were actually decent yesterday, especially in comparison to their Division 4 exploits so far. But yeah, no, I totally agree.
What do you think, Dick?
Prize,
Well, I think, listen, that's the million-dollar question around the provincials. And the only solution to that is that you just completely do away with them, because there's no structure that you can keep a provincial system and completely separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of the really top teams in the week. Like, if you do, you don't have a provincial system. So that's it. It's not about is it good for Laois or Dublin or whoever it is. It's can the provincials survive on their own? So if one hand we're going to give it credit in terms of what it gave the likes of Colm Collins and New York, you have to take what comes on the flip side with it, that on occasion you're going to throw these teams together and there's going to be mismatches. But listen, that happens in every sport. And I think this is what frustrates me in all of the narratives around this. We for some reason in the GAA, especially in football, we can't accept that we have imperfections, we have lopsided games, and we have to try and dismiss all the competitions around it. Like rugby have it, like soccer has it. So you have the FA Cup, you have the Carabao Cup that you put, you know, and 99% of those games, the favourite, does a number on the other. But every so often you have this story, David slays Goliath, and we're happy enough to keep the competitions on that. So I think, you know, unless somebody really, really is passionate enough to take out the provincials, you know, Laois will play Dublin and they'll compete and they'll get beaten. And you know what? Then they'll have 4 weeks to prepare and the world won't end and we'll get on with things. But, you know, I think given Colm Collins and Clare the opportunity to beat Cork is a price worth paying for Laois having to get a trimming from Dublin next week, in my opinion.
That's a fair point. If you're going to take the good stuff and celebrate New York and celebrate Clare, it's a fair point. Billy Sheehan didn't do any interviews yesterday, obviously because of the circumstances, but it would have been an interesting question to ask him on, you know, maybe after the season, he might tell you what he would really have liked. But it's just one of those things that are thrown up and, you know, just nowhere in the foreseeable future is there a future without the provincials. But at the minute, we're running a competition in the league, which is based on your status and your standing, and you're playing against similarly ranked teams. With the championship, which is also, you know, is a meritocracy essentially, where you're either a Sandwire team or a Tailteann Cup team. But in the middle of that, we have a competition that's based on geography. So it is a peculiar one, and it's probably, you know, because the provincial championships as they stand are sacrosanct. I like the system, I have to say, because in terms of real terms, I don't think there's a scenario that exists in real terms where the provinces aren't a factor. And as long as that's the case, what we have at the minute is working out pretty well. It's early days, of course, but I think it's working quite well at the minute.
Yeah. So look, even just as a quick look across the hedge or something else, because sometimes we're a wee bit too insular in the football or in the GAA Championship. Look at the, what's it called now, Vernie, the United Rugby Cup or the Guinness Pro 14 or whatever they call it now. Like, how many iterations have they gone through that and trying to accommodate different clubs and the likes of the Italian clubs going in there? And they're just thrown in there to try and build the game, but they're just getting hockeyed every week. You know, they're not talking about turning it on its head just because you've lopsided games. It is what it is. And the provincial championships are what they are. They're not perfect, but they have a value. You know, as I say, every year, if you sat down and analysed every game, you mentioned it, Donegate, you're dead right. The competitiveness and the parochialness in the lower ranks of the Leinster Championship have merit. They have merit for those border counties that play each other, the Longfords, the Westmeads, the Offleys. You know, there's parishes, there's clubs that straddle and parishes that straddle, but they want to win those games, they don't want to lose them. All that has value. And we have to value that in the GAA. That's what it's built on. And as I say, let's just enjoy the provincial championships, what we can get out of them, what we got this weekend, what we'll get next weekend. And then when they're done, and we'll enjoy, as you say, a more structured meritocracy type structure that we maybe all want, and you're going to have that. And it's great to actually see that people have already accepted the Tailteann Cup. Like, remember, it was only a couple of years ago, everyone saying, well, this could never happen. Do you know what I mean? This separation. If you'd done a poll, how many people would actually argue for a reversal for what you have now to back what you have? You'd have very few. I think
Wexford were very positive yesterday too.
Absolutely.
And I think Westmead last year they actually did the competition a service. They won it, they celebrated it. People turned out for the celebration. There was sort of stuff on social media and all that. So that immediately gave it a credibility that, you know, that you could, a bit like the Tommy Murphy, that it could never have had. And once that happened, I think, and everyone's there, like, I think pretty much every team in that will be in the Tailteann Cup will think they can win it. Not every team, but very close to it, they'll think think they have a shot.
When you look at across the water at multi-millionaire soccer players and teams and franchises celebrating the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup, the Europa League, like, I just cannot understand why we can't celebrate, and we are celebrating our secondary competitions in the same way. As I say, for every team, they have their merit in a given point.
Are they secondary competitions, Dick, or are they the third string competition now?
Which?
The provincials.
I'd say, well, put it this, if Monaghan win a Ulster title this year, the only thing that would top that is Sam Maguire. So that's all I can say.
It's quite subjective, isn't it?
Absolutely, very subjective. It depends where you're from. And that's what I'm saying. There is still a very local aspect to it. Leinster less so. But all I know is the Ulster Championship, and I'd say the Connacht probably is still up there as the second in waiting to
The next team to win a Leinster Championship will be delighted for themselves as well. The next non-Dublin team.
This is it, 100%. Yeah.
Well, the provincial championships definitely gave us plenty to talk about at the weekend. I'd say that moment in the Bronx when that ball hit the net and the celebrations thereafter will still be discussed at the end of the year.
You didn't mention how bad the penalties were, though. Jesus.
Yeah.
They were atrocious. I'd say, obviously, whatever about Andy Moore, and he's a good coach, he's obviously not practicing penalties. Mother of God. Did they score any? No, didn't get the chance to take the last one. That was a bigger statistical anomaly than McIlroy's flop in Augusta. That's what it was. Did not score one penalty in five. Anyway, we'll not talk about Rory. That's for another podcast.
That's the first weekend of the Championship done and dusted. Dick and Dunica, thanks a million for joining us.
All right, folks.
Well, we're delighted to be joined by Waterford legend John Milan as we reflect on Limerick's league final win. It finished Limerick 220, Kilkenny 15 points. I don't know about you, John, but to me, it looked like Limerick were only in third gear in this, and they still swatted Kilkenny aside by 11 points and hit 15 wides in the second half.
Oh, fairly, what are we going to do for an awful lot of the chase and pack, for an awful lot of counties that are dreaming of winning an All-Ireland this year? I don't know where you even start or where you even begin to even go and, trying to dissect where you're going to take on this Limerick team. You were down there yesterday, I was down there myself. You're 100% right. I mean, they were probably operating at probably 80, 85% yesterday. Before the match, when I seen the personnel that were missing, came through, that Declan Hannah Moss were playing, Kyle Hayes, and I said to myself, geez, I think Kilkenny have a right chance here today. The handicap was 5 points. I was saying to my own mind, I said, right, this is going to be a really close affair. And after such a slow start, you have to consider as well, Limerick had only 1 point on the board after 10 minutes. And that came from a free from Galan. And then it was 16 minutes before they had the first point from play. Now, you flip that over, then, come the 71st, 72nd minute, they had 220 on the board. And as you touched on there, they had 15 wides in the second half, 20 in all. Really, if they wanted to win that game, they could have won that game yesterday by 19, 20 points. I just think they're just an amazing side, amazing to watch. And whatever's thrown at them, they can deal with it, no problem. Like, a lot of the talk coming out of the All-Ireland final last year is that, Kilkenny went zonal. They didn't push up on the Limerick half-forward line. Right, that was grand. They pushed up on the Limerick half-forward line yesterday. And what happened? Left the space inside for Flanagan and Galland to deal with the damage. So the head scratcher for a lot of managers and a lot of teams now is, how do you go at them? What's the best blueprint to go and beat them? Like, Waterford play them in 2 weeks' time. It's highly likely they're going to go with seven at the back. They're going to go with a sweeper. That's grand. I mean, you come out to flood that middle third. They'll just work it out from the back. They'll work them triangles. They'll work the ball up the field. And then you have someone like Barry Nash playing corner back. He scores 1-1. So I don't know. I really don't know. And when you're up in the gantry as well, what they have really that stands to them as well. And I've seen it myself, when you're up in radio duties and you see it, their stats team are unbelievable. Shawnee O'Donnelly's involved with Ballygunner as well. They've two cameras. They've one camera, I'm thinking, picks up all the movement within the back, their own, within the opposition's back line. And then the other camera, I'm thinking, picks up the movement of the opposition forward line. was watching it yesterday. They send it down. So Canork and his two men down below then have their screen. They're able to see, they're able to dissect how the game is going, how the game is playing out from the gantry overview. And they're able to then just kind of, you know, push the buttons, whatever buttons have to be pushed, they're able to push them. They have everything. They have everything. The top-class management, top-class stats team, an unbelievable team, a generational team. And for me, they're in a far superior place than they were 12 months ago. And it's frightening. It's actually scary, you know, the depth of talent that they have there. You know, it's frightening to even look at their subs bench yesterday. A lot of those subs would make any inter-county team across Ireland. So, yeah, look, it's championship starts in 2 weeks' time. But, look, we're in the month of April now. I'd say you could nearly hand Limerick the Lee McCarthy Cup now, right now, if you wanted to.
Donegal, scary was the word John used there. No Declan Hannan, their captain. No Kyle Hayes, you know, a marauding wing back. No Will O'Donoghue. No score from Keane Lynch. No score from Grod Hegarty. No score from Peter Casey. They still put up 220, and as John said there, they could have won by 20 points. It is a scary prospect coming down the tracks for everyone in Munster and outside of Munster. Then,
yeah, I think John summed it up. Like, you know, where do you start figuring these boys out? It kind of reminded me a little bit of what Colm Cooper said about Dublin when they were in their pomp. He said, look, Dublin, just ignore whatever it is you're doing. It's just completely irrelevant to them. They're going about their own business in their own way. And that's exactly the same with Limerick. Kilkenny tried a few things. You know, can't say it really worked for them. But in any case, no matter what they did, you know, did Kilkenny have the pieces on the chessboard to win that game yesterday? There's no evidence to suggest they did. And I think John's right. Like, hand them the All-Ireland. I think certainly the best bet is now you'd expect them to get through. Expect them to get through Munster, of course. The best bet is that they just, like for everyone else, I think it's just that they have a bad day. And there's been no sign of them having a bad day. I can't remember the last time they had a bad day in any game of significance. I think you can leave last year's league alone. I think we've gone through that enough. But like in any game that really mattered, when is the last time they didn't show up or didn't perform to the levels they needed to? Are you going back 4-5 years maybe?
First 20 minutes against Kilkenny, I'd say, in the 2019 All-Ireland semi-final, and then they were probably poor against Cork the first day in 2019. But that's how far back you're going.
Yeah, you're looking at something like that. So, you know, as John says, if you're an opposition manager and you're flicking through that performance yesterday and you're looking for ways, well, where can we do? Can we get after this guy? Can we isolate that guy? There's no answers. Like, there's no, you know, no matter what way you play it to them. I think they have the answers. And as you said, Michael, to have other lads on the bench as well who are going to start when it comes to the business end, and you just wonder who's losing out and what are the cavalry coming off the bench then in that scenario. They are, I suppose, you know, they've won a huge amount already. I think we can start talking about, by the time their run comes to an end, whenever that may be, what will they have won? What terms will we be talking about this team in then?
There's 11 titles at the moment, 3 leagues, 4 Munsters. They're going for 5 in a row in Munster. They're going for 4 All-Irelands in a row as well. It's frightening.
And last year, lads, I was kind of contemplating the fact that they could be going to the other side of the mountain. And the way I say that, the other side of the mountain where, you know, that will give hope to the other teams. Where we've seen Kilkenny, you know, they reach their peak, they go to the other side of the mountain, but they're still good enough to push on and still win All-Irelands. But I'm thinking to myself that I don't even think they've reached a peak yet. I honestly don't. I honestly think that this could be the year where they just blow everyone aside this year. I honestly do. I was thinking last year, Clare got close to him, Galway got close to him. And just touching on and what Donegan said there, that, you know, if they have a blow par day, I still think even if they have a below par day and are a little bit off it, I still think they're going to win games.
They'd need to have a really bad one, wouldn't they? Yeah.
What are we talking? Like, a really bad one. Like, if you're thinking yesterday, they had 20 wides, their scoring efficiency, Kylie touched on in the aftermath of the match, that it just wasn't good enough and they've got to go away and improve. So if they're going to go away and improve on their scoring efficiency from yesterday, you know, you're thinking to yourself, like, You know, the 5-1 is actually a bad day for Limerick. That's what I want to know. Because, and with that, if they do have a bad day, it's going to take the team that an opposition team that are playing against them. They're still going to have to register what 220. They're still going to have to hit that 27-point mark to possibly beat them.
Yeah, and I was just thinking there, like a bad day is probably, that's probably a bad day for them at the minute. It's probably 119 or something like that.
Yeah, but Donegan, that's not realistic. I don't.
Yeah.
Do you see him like, I agree. I don't see him just hitting 119. Like they're creating the chances. Like how do you go and counteract him to go and say, well, right, we're going to try and stifle them today, and if with the hope that they only score 119, 120. I don't know. And this is the baffling thing. If we're having this conversation, you know, what are the opposition managers saying to their teams? Like, you know, and look, you gotta be realistic too, I suppose, for not an opposing teams and the players. I mean, they can't give up hope. They can't throw in the towel and just say, oh, look, you know, we're not going to beat them and stop believing. Because if that happens, I mean, we may as well all go home and we may as well not have a championship at all. But yeah, I don't know where you begin. It goes back to where do you begin to try and take look for grey areas in this team, as you said, Donegan.
I think the other sort of notable thing, just from covering Kilkenny over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of the times you'd be watching them and the teams that beat them, I would have felt that the teams to beat Kilkenny by a point over that period of time, teams nearly had to be 5 and 6 and 7 points better than them because of the hole Kilkenny had over everyone during that period, during the Cody era, I suppose. And even if Kilkenny weren't particularly good on the day, they might always dig out a result, or their mystique, if you like, would, you know, make them better than the sum of their parts nearly, because teams would be just nearly couldn't believe they had them on the edge and about to beat them. Like Limerick are utterly unmoved by all that sort of stuff now. They are the Kilkenny, they are the team with the mystique. Like, and that counts for something too. Like, here we are, we're talking about the league final, we're on the cusp of championship, and we're talking about, you know, these boys are unbeatable in the foreseeable future. And that carries something as well. You know, that sort of, there's no doubt that we're not the only ones, as John says, having this conversation this morning about how do you go about trying to pick apart Limerick, because there's no straight answers.
There's psychological kind of damage before you even go to play them now as well, isn't there? You have to be 110%. You're thinking they have to be 80%. You're nearly thinking everything has to go right for you. You're thinking a lot has to go wrong for them as well. You can come in there, John.
Well, one thing very that you need to bring to the table, you have to have the appetite for work rate, and you have to have the appetite for hardship. And that's one thing under Cody, as we've touched on, was always constant, that they had the appetite for work rate, they had the appetite for hardship. And that's why they would go toe-to-toe. That's why they went toe-to-toe with Limerick in the past. That wasn't there yesterday. The work rate wasn't there. The appetite for hardship wasn't there. And it was a bit similar to the way Cork were kind of, the way Cork played against Kilkenny, the way Kilkenny played yesterday. And you know, I thought Kilkenny, to be fair, I thought they were shocking yesterday, you know. And it's Derek Ling, I suppose, Liam Sheedy touched on it last night. It's probably a good time for it to happen, but you know, he's probably scratching his head now, saying, well, look, realistically, who do we have to come into this team? You still have TJ Reid to come back in. And as a lad touched to me last night, lads, a good mate of mine said, it clarifies last year's All-Ireland final at 34 years of age, how good TJ Reid was in that All-Ireland final, you know, with his performance last year in that All-Ireland final, to bring Limerick down the home straight in that All-Ireland final. But look, outside of that, I'm looking at their team. I mean, the experiment with Paddy Deegan, I don't know, that's probably going to have to be looked at. I don't think that's probably going to be something that's going to play out into the championship, where he's going to be wing forward. But look, to be fair to Derek Ling, he's tried things in this league. But one thing, and one thing was evident yesterday, and when you go and play Limerick, everything has to go to hand. If you go with this hurly touch hand, forget about it. They'll just suffocate the life out of you. And that was That was evident yesterday with Kilkenny. You know, they were trying to push, you know, ball, hurley ball to hand, and you just can't deal with against this Limerick team, you know.
Sorry, I was just going to ask Michael, who do you think is the best of the rest? Who, like, we know who number one is, obviously. Who is, even if they are well off, who's the best placed team to challenge Limerick, do you think?
Go on in there, Moll, you come up with the answer. Yeah, for
it's not easy, like.
Oh, God. Well, I'll be straight to after yesterday. I think Limerick are, I would say they're probably a margin of probably 8 points better than the rest. And I think then with the rest, I think on any given day, on form, if they're at it, I think the rest can beat each other. So yeah, and look, again, you know, we just don't know. Like, will Waterford get back to the form of 2020, 2021? I suppose, look, Galway have shown in the past that, you know, they don't fear Limerick. They'll go toe to toe with them in the physicality stakes. I suppose go through with Clare. Clare went toe to toe with them last year. Tipperary seemed to be able to, you know, go toe to toe with them for about the best part of 40-45 minutes. Yeah, look, it's probably four or five of them. You know, they're on any given day could be a good second. But I think for me, I think Limerick are probably an 8-9 point margin ahead of the rest of the chasing pack. So yeah, look, I would say possibly maybe after yesterday, if you're going on last year's semi-final performance, I'd say you're probably looking at Galway.
I wouldn't totally write off Kilkenny now, I have to say. In 2019, Limerick went down to Nolan Park and obliterated Kilkenny after winning the All-Ireland. And all of a sudden, 5 or 6 months later, Kilkenny beat them in an All-Ireland semi-final. I wouldn't totally write off Kilkenny. Now, that was, you know, beyond bad yesterday. And, you know, John, you're an inside forward. Like, they just didn't get any ball to the inside forward line. There was no half-decent ball going inside as well. I would expect them to be a lot better. Under Cody, they always bounce back really well from a setback, and I would expect them to be an awful lot better. They also have the luxury of, I'd say, regardless of how bad they play over the coming months, they're still going to get out of Leinster. They're still going to be in the All-Ireland Series. They're not going playing, you know, Tip, Cork, Limerick, Waterford. You know what I mean? They will get out of their province. They will be in those stages. And I suppose, historically, the last few years, Galway have shown that that they've thrown it down to them in, you know, a couple of All-Ireland semi-finals. But I still wouldn't totally write off Kilkenny, and part of that is through a history, and another part of it is to do with TJ coming back. I think Richie Hogan has a broken wrist after the Cork game. He'd probably be back around that time as well. Maybe get a few more of the Ballyhale lads in it. I thought Adrian Mullen was brilliant yesterday while he was on the pitch, but they couldn't really leave him on much longer, just because that was his first, it was only his second game of 2023, including club and county. But it definitely sent out some warning, Simon, on the eve of championship.
Just on the Hugh Lawler experiment, Bernie, would you leave Hugh Lawler number six, or would you, or he was wing back at stages yesterday? Would you put him back in the full back line?
I probably would, John. Yeah, I probably would. I'd probably put Dara Corcoran in wing back, maybe. I thought that was an interesting one, playing Hugh Lawler wing back. I assumed it was, you know, to track Tom Morrissey. Tom Morrissey didn't play. It was David Blanchfield and Gerard Hegarty. I'd be surprised if he wasn't back full back for the championship, being honest with you. Just something that you mentioned, John, as well. Like, people have been talking throughout the league. Good few different pundits have said, you know, maybe you need to push up on the Limerick half forwards and follow them or whatever. So Blanchfield followed Hegarty, and Hegarty was quiet. Hugh Lawler followed Cottle O'Neill at times, and he was quiet enough. Keane Lynch was quiet enough, and then all of a sudden, and just a word on Gillan, John, like Gillan has been, you know, he's only come back into the squad by all accounts midway through the league. Like, he's getting better with every game as well. And he just offers them that out ball. They don't have a player like that, as good as Flanagan is. They don't have somebody that they can just leave in at any sort of a high ball and you think he's going to create a goal from it. And just having that threat and having him back around the goals is some benefit to them. He just offers them something that nobody else has, realistically.
Yeah, and we touched on it. And look, he's coming back in with the kind of the bit between his teeth, you know, a point to prove. You know, got a little bit of a break, you know, has that little bit element of freshness to his game. And yeah, look, he's in a really good place. And look, he has a good understanding with Flanagan. You know, you touched on it there. Flanagan looked a little bit out of sorts when Gallan wasn't around. But, you know, in that two-man inside forward line, you know, they have that understanding. They have a great relationship. They've had a great relationship over the years. You know, Graham Mulcahy played that role where he went out, you know, had that freedom of going out from number 15. And now that role has been given to Peter Casey. But, yeah, Gallan, I touched on it a couple of weeks ago on this podcast. You know, he's crucial to Limerick. And the sooner they got him back, the better. But now he's back, and he's back with the bit between his teeth. And, you know, that doesn't read well for too many full back lines going into this championship.
Are you worried as a Waterford man, John, with what's coming in 2 weeks' time?
Am I worried?
Is it not at the stage now, lads, where, I don't know how this will go down, but are they gone so far ahead that, you know, teams nearly have a free shot at them? You're not expected to beat them. You know, is there some liberation in that, maybe?
For Waterford in 2 weeks' time, right, what way do you approach it, right? They obviously go out to have a right crack off it, right? If they come within 6 points of them, I'd be saying, Jesus, that's a good day. That's a very good day's work. And you can go and take that into the Cork game 7 days later. But on the flip side of that, if you were to go and take a ship of beating against them, you know, probably 15, 16 points, that's not good for morale going into the following week. So, yeah, look, and Waterford have a couple of, we're hearing they have a couple of injuries. Now, I don't know how true the things are. You know, will Austin play? Won't he play? I'm hearing he's okay. He's back training. But if there is any little doubt that, you know, he is carrying any little bit of a knock, would you be risking him against Limerick, knowing that, you know, you're probably the most important game that you have is going to be 7 days later, and kind of leave him off against Limerick? But, yeah, it's a hard one. And knowing David Fitzgerald, like, I don't think he's come up against Connacht yet or John Kiely in a championship game. Am I right in saying that?
No, not in a championship game. They beat his Wexford actually beat Limerick in a real crucial Division 1B game in his first year in Wexford, but they've never met in championship, no.
I know Davey, he's a winner, and he will, look, we all know Davey. He will be sitting back in the next 2 weeks and saying, I want to have a crack off of this now and see where it takes me. And see where it takes his team. So, and plus as well, he's worked with Connacht before, so he probably knows, to be fair to him, he probably knows the way Connacht will be thinking as well, and, you know, probably has a plan in the back of his own mind, you know, how he's going to go about taking on this Limerick team. But yeah, look, I think, as Donegan said, it's probably a free shot, but, you know, I think there's pros and there's cons. If Waterford go and have a right good cut-off and get within 4 or 5, or get within the 6-point margin, happy days. But in saying that, you know, they had a right crack-off up against Limerick last year, and then 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, they went out and got beaten by Cork. So, unfortunately, Waterford have the task of playing Limerick first. But look, it might be a bad thing, because, you know, everyone's going to be building Limerick up after yesterday and saying, you know, they're untouchable. So, again, you know, what's the approach going to be? I don't have the answers. Only David Fitzgerald and his Waterford management team and the Waterford players have the answers for what they're going to bring to the table in 2 weeks' time.
Lads, seeing as I'm in the form for asking hairy questions, what three teams come out of Munster?
My answers have changed a lot since the year started. I still think Limerick and Tipperary will be the top two. Who the third one is, I would have thought it was Cork maybe before the league semi-final. I don't fancy Waterford, being honest with you. So I think it'll be between Cork and Clare. I'd probably just about go with Cork, I'd say. Yeah, probably just about go with Cork. Mull, are you going to go? Is the head going to rule the heart?
No offense, John. No offense.
I went all in last year with the head, the heart, and look where that got Waterford for last year. So it might be a bad thing if I predict that Waterford won't finish in the top three. I think there's two games, and they're going to be in the first 2 weeks, are going to be critical for the four teams outside Limerick, and that's the Cork Waterford fixture. And that fixture between Clare and Tipperary up in Ennis, they'll go a long way to deciding, you know where teams are going to finish. Because I think if you can get a win early doors, you get momentum behind you, you know, get the county behind you, feel good factor behind you, and you can kind of build on that. I think Limerick, I'm going to go with Tipperary under Cattle. I just like having, I like Liam Cattle. I like Bevins. Tony Brown is in. I'd be very, very good mates with Tony. I worked with Tony before in the past. I think he's top class. So I'm going to have Tipperary in there. And then I think it's going to come down to that Waterford Cork fixture. And then possibly, you know the way you can have kind of a three-team league. I think it's going to come down to between Waterford, Cork, Clare, and Waterford, and that Clare Cork fixtures. So, I'm going to go Limerick, Tipperary.
The agony.
Yeah, I think if Waterford can beat Cork, it'll come down to that fixture then on May the 13th against Clare. And Davey, he hasn't gotten one over on loan yet. So, I'll give a small hesitant vote to my own county, Waterford. If provided they can find that form of 2020, 2021. If they don't, I think Clare will sneak in for that third place spot.
Well, thanks a million for joining us. I really appreciate it. We'll chat to you soon.
You're welcome, man.
That's it for this week's show. And my thanks to Donegal Boyle, Dick Clarkin and John Milan for joining me. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, don't forget to rate, review and follow the show on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.